Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Danilo's free. And it goes to Gibbs-White.
First time we've seen them attack them, and that's Brandon! Well, that's what I wanted to see Robinson do!
Taylor won, he scores! And the sticky ground goes ballistic!
Here's Bob Williams, and he's through here! And in the end, Forrest will say it doesn't matter how you play, as long as you win it!
Hello and welcome back to Red Side of the Trent as Forest come back from international break to host Crystal Palace at home in the final stretch of the season. Here to give me the Palace point of view is Dan Cook of Hopkin, looking to curl one in. Dan, how are you, mate? Are you well?
I'm good, yeah. I was a bit rough last week. I had a bit of a cough and a cold, but I feel all right now and looking forward to the final stretch of the season, as you say.
Yeah, now people who have subscribed to our podcast and YouTube nowadays can actually put the face to the logo. And if they've not seen you on telly on BBC Sport and overlap and everything else, you do well to keep fairly humble there, mate. Just before we get into Palace and everything else, I did want to ask your brutal, honest opinion about the financial fair play saga, the PSR. Obviously, Forest had a points deduction before the international break and now have looking to appeal it. I've seen some fans say that because Forest cooperated and now have appealing it, they should now be deducted more points because they're not actually cooperating, which I found hilarious. What's your honest opinion about it all? Because I actually generally thought, and I even said this to Jeff Stelling on TalkSport, not to blow me in trumpet there, that I'd be quite happy to take it and kind of let the football do the talking for the rest of the season. But what's your thoughts on it all?
I think it's such a multifaceted thing. You know, you look at the different clubs, the different stories. I mean, as far as I'm aware, from a neutral perspective, maybe you can pick me up on this, but a large part of Forest's indignation about it is the fact that the Brennan Johnson transfer went through later than it could have done because you were trying to maximise the amount of money. That in itself sort of creates murky water. You know, the Everton situation, them getting 10 points reduced to 6, you getting 4, then appealing it. You've got Leicester now potentially coming up and getting a points deduction before the season's even begun. It all just feels haphazard to me. You know, I think if everyone knew the rules hard and fast, you know, if you are going to even be a pound over the guidelines, then you get a 10-point deduction, no ifs, no buts. Then I'm not suggesting people would swallow it easier because, of course, 10 points is huge. But the fact that you can appeal it and it changes and then there are mitigating circumstances depending on time, in many ways, for me, it highlights that the system isn't really fit for purpose because I think, you know, not to blow my own trumpet, but when we were on the overlap, you have so many different points of view on this. You know, Spurs, from their point of view, they will argue that they've spent 10, 15 years cutting their cloth accordingly, building a new stadium, getting all this external revenue, Beyonce concerts and NFL, so that they don't have to worry about financial fair play. And then you get a club like Forest who come up to the Premier League and because of the situation with your squad, you had to pretty much rebuild it overnight. That's going to put you in a difficult position. It doesn't mean that there isn't the money there to spend from the owner's perspective, but it's the multitude of different threads and stories that have led to a situation where it all feels mangled. And, you know, you get so many different clubs looking at it from their individual point of view, but I think something does need to change in terms of the overall governance, because at the moment, I think it feels as though they are making it up as they go along for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel as a Palace fan from your perspective? Because it's been quite well documented by yourself. And I think when I've like clicked on any of your posts about Palace and your spending, is there seems to be a little bit of disgruntlement towards Parish in not spending. But I guess from another point of view, is you kind of see why, because of so many rules and regulations, and maybe that Palace don't have that spending power. Though I feel like you've been quite frugal really in the last several years to maintain your Premier League status. But now you say it now, like there's this whole thing of, well, Forest has spent loads of money and only got a 4-point deduction because of cooperated. Does that kind of give like almost a green light to yourselves and maybe like Fulham or Bournemouth, although Bournemouth might be in trouble now, to go and spend the money and go, well, we'll take a 3-4 point deduction because it will be better off because we'll get better players?
Well, I think, you know, that is the argument that you can make against it. And the precedent has somewhat been set by the fact that Forest have only got 4 points. I know 4 points is still quite sizable when you look at the relegation battle. But, I mean, the whole plan from Palace, I mentioned Spurs. We are sort of a mini version of that in a sense, because we've put money towards the academy from a Category 1 status perspective and trying to get that conveyor belt of young players coming through. There's the long planned main stand extension that still hasn't begun construction, but it's there to be done. We've got planning permission and there's been extra funds raised for that. And the reason for it is that we want a greater revenue stream, more match day income, because it puts us on a, not a level playing field, but a higher playing field than the one we would have been if Selhurst had just stayed the same. And I think that is where they have to be careful if they are going to change the governance, because if you have clubs that have gone down a 10 or 15 year path to make sure they are more financially robust, only to then throw it out of the window, then you potentially have a situation where you get blowback from those clubs, quite rightly. So you look at our ownership model. We've got billionaires as part of, you know, the setup behind the scenes. Josh Harris and David Blitzer. I mean, Josh Harris has just brought the Washington Commanders for billions of dollars. It's not as though he doesn't have the finances to supercharge us in a sense. But obviously the PSR regulations have stopped us from doing that. And, you know, it's frustrating, yes. But I think there is that group of clubs that have stayed underneath the threshold who understandably feel as though it would be unfair for them to, you know, just bumble along and clubs not necessarily be given a hefty enough punishment. But at the same time, I understand that, you know, you can't make hard and fast rules because of the ever-moving nature of different club circumstances, such as yourselves in Everton. So I'm not sure what the answer is. I don't have a particularly strong opinion on it from that sense. All I know is that if you enable it to be completely without checks, then you sort of lay the land open for a club like Newcastle to just come in, given their ownership structure, and completely blow everything apart anyway. So there needs to be something. I'm just not sure what it is.
Yeah, it's quite funny because, like you say that, I didn't know that about your circumstances, that you have got the riches there, because it's the same with Forest. Like Marinakis is a billionaire as well. I think pretty much every single owner in the Premier League is a billionaire. And like you got Sheffield United with like the poorest Saudi owner ever known to man, sort of thing. But I don't think he lacks a few quid either in that respect. But let's get back to the actual football, because that's what we're more bothered about. But it's safe to say that Palace have had a difficult season. It's been very up and down. Lots of injuries, especially to the two star boys in Michael Olise and Eberechi Eze. What have you made of your season? It's probably not been the best spectacle. Probably say the same about Forest as well. But yeah, difficult circumstances.
It's been pretty much the definition of treading water from the first kick, really. I think if you look at the decision, I've said this to a fair few people over the last few months. The decision to bring Roy Hodgson back was one that plenty of people scoffed at the back end of last season. He, of course, I think it was 10 games that he was in charge of, and we've got 10 games left of this season. He did so well in that period that I don't necessarily blame the board for bringing him back for this campaign, because we were going into it without Wilfried Zaha. We knew we couldn't spend a huge amount of money and they wanted that steady hand at the wheel. But it became very quickly evident that the Panache style that we were playing with towards the back end of last season didn't quite filter through into this one. You know, he has, Roy Hodgson, that has been dealt some pretty severe blows. You know, I think it's Sabir Eze and Michael Olise have only started 6 or 7 games together all season long. Cheick Doucouré, who's an absolutely huge part of our setup, has been missing since November. The goalkeeper situation has been, you know, stop start. Sam Johnston's just got injured again on England duty, and I think he is now battling to be fit before the end of the season. You've got Mark Gay, who went down with a pretty severe knee injury at Brighton away. He's probably only going to be back for the last week or two of the campaign. It just feels as though every time you get a little bit of momentum or a platform, something comes along and takes your legs away from under you. Obviously, every club has injury issues. It's not as though it's a unique case. But when you look at the managerial situation and the fact that whilst we haven't been in particularly bad relegation danger, we've never really gone above sort of 14th, I think, this year. And that in itself has led me to just really wish away a couple of months and look forward to the summer coming, hopefully with us still as a Premier League football club.
Yeah, I mean, I think I looked at the statistics when Elise and Eze have played, and they've normally won and then scored or assisted each other as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like Son and Kane all over again, but in the lower end of the table, unfortunately. It was always set for Roy Hodgson to probably retire at the end of the season, but due to illness and maybe form, your kind of hand's been forced a little bit, and Oliver Glasner's come in. I know it's only been a short tenure, but what did you first make of that appointment? Because obviously he won Europa League with Eintracht Frankfurt, and we were linked with him as well, actually, I think, before Nuno Espirito Santo come in. But yeah, what did you make of Glasner's like CV as you were, and him as a person? Maybe what have you seen of him in interviews and stuff?
Well, I mean, for me, plenty of people from a neutral perspective did at least when the news came that Roy Hodgson was going to be leaving his post, because of the fact that he collapsed at the training ground and he had that spell where he was in hospital and our managerial situation was in limbo. I think plenty of people from outside the club put two and two together and got five, because, you know, the form leading up to that decision had been dreadful. You know, we weren't scoring goals. We looked completely devoid of confidence. He himself, you know, was making strange tactical decisions, and it felt as though he was really digging his heels in and sort of rallying against the dying of the light in a sense. But, you know, you look at the day where he collapsed, it's not as though we decided to go down to the training ground, saw him collapse on the floor and decided we were going to bring Oliver Glasner in. This was a managerial appointment that was at least a week or two in the making, formally and probably informally, a lot longer before that. Oliver Glasner has spoken about the fact that he had already been teed up to take over in the summer anyway. It just got accelerated a little bit more rapidly than we would have expected. I think in terms of what he has done, impact-wise, in the first three games of his tenure, and indeed, you know, as much as he was only in the director's box at Everton away, we played with more direction in that particular game, even though he was just observing. He's very big on the fitness levels of the group. He wants players to be able to run all the way through 95 to 100 minutes of a Premier League match. He's made a lot of the fact that I think we've conceded by far the most goals of any team in the Premier League in the final 15. And even if you look at the last game before the international break, Luton at home, we conceded with pretty much the last kick of the game to drop 2 points there. So it's clearly something that's at the forefront of his mind. But hopefully, you know, coming back off this prolonged break, because it's been 3 weeks from us rather than two, we were supposed to play, and then Newcastle, because of their FA Cup exploits, that game got pushed back. We've had a prolonged period of time to get to grips with exactly what he wants tactically, and I would expect us to be at it from the very first kick at the City Ground. You know, we went to Spurs and we were playing in something of a low block, and plenty of people just said, oh, it's Roy Hodgson Mark II, there's no difference. But it's very, very difficult, as you will be aware, as a team in the lower half of the table, to go to a club like Spurs and try and meet them toe-to-toe, you'll just get taken apart. So there was a degree of pragmatism there. But I think in a game like this, that's more of a coin flip, we can probably expect us to go at you from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention about the break. It's been a long extended one, and we've both had to dwell on last-minute equalisers from Luton. Yourselves through Corley Woodrow and Luke Berry doing it to us, where in games where I watched the highlights of the Palace game and I wondered how you weren't 3-0 up before they even got a sniff. And the same with us, where they've two cleared off the line and we've missed decent chances as well. You've got a tough run in, Dan. Do you think you've got enough to do you think 8 points now, I think, over us in 18th, do you think that's enough? Or do you think it could go closer because of the running that you've got, where I think even at home, I look at them and I go, it's going to be tough in every single game. Not I think every game in the Premier League is really tough, but Joey, you're not playing many of the bottom sort of sides, are you?
No. Although in a strange way, that may work in our favour because, you know, there is this expectation when you play a Luton or a Sheffield United that you have to win these games. And it leads to that sense of stress, I think. We've got the first two games after this international break, yourselves and then Bournemouth away, Tuesday or Wednesday of that week that comes. So if we can get 3 or 4 points out of 6 from those two games, then you would be fair in suggesting, I think, that we'd probably be all right. You know, if you look at our points total now, we are above a point a game. And even though it's been, as I say, a stop-start and frustrating campaign, if that form continues, then we'll be more than comfortable. But of course, you don't want to count your chickens before they've hatched. And, you know, I'm not going to write off any game as a guaranteed win because there's no such thing for a club like Crystal Palace in the Premier League. But I think the players have really bought into what Oliver Glasner wants. And, you know, it's one of those, a flap of a butterfly's wings. If we clear that one chance that Luton had, they've ended up scoring from, then you're looking at 6 points from 9 available and we're 10 points clear of the bottom three. So that in itself looks a lot better. I think it was our highest XG of the season against Luton. So as much as we've obviously dropped 2 points with that last kick, there are certainly green shoots, shall we say, and hopefully that continues in these next two games straight after the break finishes.
I love the optimism of football fans because we're exactly the same like boat as yourself, Dan, where we've got Palace and then we've got Fulham at home on Tuesday and we're like, well, 4 or 6 points and we're in a good position again almost because even despite the deduction. But you mentioned since Glasner's come in, it's been a lot more direct. Has anyone kind of changed in terms of like their style of players? Has any players kind of picked up the mantelpiece of and taking games by the scruff of the neck a little bit more since Glasner's come in, or has it been kind of the same sort of players standing up and being counted for?
I wouldn't say one individual was sort of, you know, really bought in specifically to it. The goal that we scored that opened the scoring, it wasn't. There was a game at the very beginning, Burnley at home, where they got a red card 10, 15 minutes into the fixture. We didn't end up scoring from that particular set piece. I think it brushed the top of the bar and went over. But of course, we eventually got over the line, got the victory. But the mere fact that that red card came was the product of a team-wide press that was probably 10 or 15 yards higher up the pitch than it would have been previously. You know, we weren't really a pressing team at all under Roy Hodgson, but Jefferson Lerma was there in a far more advanced midfield position than you would normally have expected him to be. And as a consequence of it, he ended up intercepting a pass from James Trafford. That in itself led to a situation where the red card was given for a last man foul. And, you know, we've ended up having a man advantage and getting the victory from it. So I think probably rather than one individual, there has certainly been a more of a team-wide push to try and change things. Daniel Munoz, who came in during the January window at right back, is a very attack-minded right back. And I think at the moment, there is an argument that maybe Oliver Glasner is trying to put a few square pegs in round holes because he wants to play primarily with three centre-backs and then two wing-backs, as it were. I'm not sure Tyree Mitchell is necessarily suited to that particular style. Daniel Munoz on the right certainly is. But I would expect the summer to see us approach the transfer market in a way to try and make sure that we've got a group that are more able to play in that style of football. But at the same time, you know, I think they're doing a decent job of trying to implement that tactical ideology right now.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Daniel Munoz score midweek for Colombia, yeah, didn't he? Luis Diaz making a great run down the left as he does for Liverpool so often. So, yeah, he's definitely a threat we have to be aware of, I'm sure. I've get the brothers mixed up. Is it Scott Wharton you bought or Adam Wharton?
Adam Wharton, yeah.
Scott, I watched him against Everton and I was really, really impressed with him. He's definitely a player that he's like the recipe for Palace transfers, it seems, in the last few years. Pluck someone out of the Championship who's obviously performing above expectations or exceeding them or whatever. I mean, you've done it with SA and Elise and kind of someone who I've kind of earmarked if you do lose SA or Elise because they are going to be the talk of the summer, I guess, of leaving Palace along with Mark Guerhi. Is someone like Jadon Philogene at Hull, I would not be shocked to see him in a Palace.
Neither would I.
Well, the game at Selhurst that I went to, it was a, I mean, people might look at 0-0 and think it was a bit of a drab game, but I actually thought it was quite an entertaining one at Selhurst, and one where I kind of was super impressed with our centre-half, Murillo, and equally Mark Gurley on the day, who were both impressed. What did you make of that game back in, it was nearer towards the start of the season, wasn't it, where Palace were down to the bare bones of injuries, and another game where and not the last time, Forrest have said, oh, we're playing Palace at a good time, we're playing a team at a good time when they've got no injuries and we just didn't capitalise at all. What did you make of that 0-0?
It came, as you say, at the start of the season. There was this expectation from our fan base because the back end of the previous campaign, we scored a last-minute winner against Leicester. We went to Leeds and scored 5. We went to Southampton and won away from home. That there was going to be this tidal wave of like boyish enthusiasm from Roy Hodgson because the shackles were off and he was going to have us playing free-flowing football. And even though, as you mentioned, you know, it wasn't exactly an ideal time for us because of injuries and everything else, it just, that game came at a relatively similar time to Fulham at home, which was one of the worst games I can remember for many a year at Selhurst. Another 0-0 draw. And it just, this season has been very low on the ground in terms of memorable moments, shall we say. You know, I'm sitting here now racking my brains trying to think of one specific moment of that game that stuck with me. But it sort of all moulds into one for us this campaign, or at least for me. You know, and I maybe that's Roy Hodgson's fault, or maybe it's just the circumstances that he had to deal with. But yeah, I'm very much not writing off the rest of this season, but I want us to get through, play some decent football, and then really get into the nuts and bolts of it in the summer. And this game, really, given the fact that it's the first following that 3-week layoff, is, for me, the first opportunity for us to see what an Oliver Glasner team really could look like. Because, you know, it's easy to say any coach should be able to get their ideas across, but when you are doing it in the thick of a Premier League season where games are coming every few days and you're trying to get to know your squad and implement your ideas, this is slightly different because he's had that 3-week gap. We went off to Marbella for a warm weather training camp, and hopefully it will see us playing a bit more of a style of football that is suited to him rather than having another draw as we did at Selhurst.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Yeah, I'm hoping we've used the break because we didn't get a win to one because we fluffed up a 2-goal lead over Blackpool in the FA Cup and had to play a replay. The one thing that stuck out in my head in the game against Selhurst was Murillo nearly scoring a goal of the season where he like kind of just drove through the centre of the park
and kicked it straight
at Johnson. And Mark Gurley attempted a similar thing in the second half as well, which I thought was bloody brilliant as well in some respects. How do you think Palace are going to try and hurt Forest? And weirdly, I think my friend read out a statistic that which just kind of like hit the nail on the head. Palace haven't scored from a set piece this season, and we are literally the worst team at defending them. So,
yeah, someone said this to me the other day.
Someone's O might have to go in some respects where we don't concede from one, and you might score from one, I guess.
There was a Forest fan said to me, as long as you aren't any good at set piece, or I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was basically like, you don't need to worry about it. We can't defend set pieces with Toffee. I think it's over 200 corners since we last scored from one directly, which is quite unbelievable. There have been, you know, it depends how you classify a corner because you can have different phases of play. But yeah, in terms of a ball just coming into the box and someone nodding it in, it hasn't happened for over 200. So hopefully that particular statistic changes for us. I'm not 100% sure whether or not Abiri Eze will be deployed as a 10 on the left, because with the overlapping fullbacks that I've just mentioned, we can be a bit narrow under Glasner. That is something that, you know, you sort of, I back him to work out the kinks and get us playing in a fluid way, but we still are playing with a lone front man with the predominant width coming from those two overlapping fullbacks rather than your out-and-out wingers that Palace have been known for many years, the Zahas and Balassis. So, I mean, in an ideal world, if Michael Olise and Abir Eze were both fit, you could have them both playing as 10s behind the striker with the width coming from the defensive players. But I'm not 100% sure about the 11. I saw yesterday, I can't remember who it was that reported it, but Michael Olise is potentially dicing with being in the squad for that game after a recovery session. I'm not really sure whether or not that's a good idea because he went off against Brighton having tried one sprint because of his hamstring issue and immediately had to go down the tunnel. So, you know, a lot will depend on that and his fitness, but I think we will try to get the creative players we have on the ball as much as possible and try and provide a more tangible link to the front man, because often if you don't have someone driving through the middle, then the likes of Walton and Jefferson Lerma can get sort of stuck at the base of the midfield and you don't have that fluidity in the middle of the park to get the ball up the pitch as quick as possible.
In obviously, it's hard to tell straight away with Glasner, but where do you see obvious chinks in the armour for Forrest to maybe exploit?
I mean, basically, the tactical ideology is one which I think, and this goes into the sort of long grass of Palace recent history. The year that we got promoted under Dougie Friedman, which I appreciate, well, not under Dougie Friedman, it was laid as a foundation by Dougie Friedman and finished off by Ian Holloway. But he had a back four, and then in front of that, two defensive midfielders, a number 10, two out-and-out wingers, and a lone front man. And even though this isn't exactly that, it feels as though the foundations are quite similar, albeit with a central back three rather than a four. You've still got the two DMs, you've still got a number 10, and instead of out-and-out wingers, you've got the overlapping fullbacks. That in itself, hypothetically, gives you that solid body of defensive players in the defensive third, whilst also being able to hurt other teams on the counter-attack. So, in essence, I think what Oliver Glasner wants is for us to be solid in all phases of play. I think, I'm not sure you can necessarily hurt us that clearly from a defensive point of view, because Mark Gay, as you've already mentioned, is someone that has been key for us for the last couple of years. Him not being there is a problem. But as long as Anderson, Chris Richards and Joel Ward continue to play in the fashion they have, then we should be relatively solid as a defensive unit with Lerma and Adam Walton sitting there. It's more a case of whether or not we can hurt you in the final third for me, because as I mentioned, we had the highest XG of our season so far against Luton. We weren't able to put the finishing touch to those chances. It's about us making sure that we do make good on the chances that we create on the day, I think, rather than worrying too much about us being all at sea from a defensive perspective.
I know, I'm quite looking forward to watching the battle of Mateta v Murillo or Bolly or whoever it might be. I mean, is a lump, Mateta. Yeah. He is a handful, but when I've watched him actually recently, he looks like his form's really turned up for Palace. He's a strange striker. He must frustrate you at the same time, though.
Someone said to me inside the club, I won't reveal who it was because that's the nature of being told things in confidence, but he said to me that, you know, you look at Gianfilippo Mateta, and because he's a lone striker, because he's a big lad, people automatically assume he's your archetypal number nine who can hold the ball up and knock it off. But he didn't learn to do that as a kid. You know, he is, in essence, a street footballer that just happens to have the frame of a number nine. So he is gradually learning that craft in England. You know, he's not Grant Holt. He's not going to be able to have it stick to his chest and play it off to people. But he is getting better in terms of his first touch, using his strength properly. The problem I have with JP is that in any moment, he can be a fantastic goal scorer. He can. It's almost like the least time you can give him, the better. You know, if he has nothing to think about and it's just a case of him putting the ball in the back of the net, he does things. The goal that he scored a week or two ago, I can't remember if it was against, it must have been against Burnley, where the ball came, I'm completely, because of the 3-week gap, my brain's gone in terms of which game it was. But the ball came across the box from Daniel Munoz and he's flicked it into the far corner to the point where everyone sort of thought it was a complete fluke. But if you actually watch the replay, he's meant it. But of course, you need him to do that every single week. And that is the frustration. I think in terms of service, You look back to when we had Glenn Murray in the promotion season. Everyone knew that he would get in front of his marker at the front post, be there for those balls across the floor and score plenty of goals that way. I don't think anyone is quite sure what JP is going to do from a teammate perspective or a fan point of view. So providing him with that level of service where, you know, you give it to him where he wants it is very difficult because you're not sure where he's going to pop up. He doesn't have the patterns that an archetypal Alan Shearer or a Glenn Murray, as I've just mentioned, would have done. And he is, by definition, chaos, which on one hand makes it difficult for your defenders, but on the other makes it difficult for the people trying to provide him with assists as well.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of story with Taiwo, wouldn't you? When he plays, he's just chaos. You don't know what you're going to get. From a Palace point of view as well, who do you look at Forest and kind of a pinpoint like a threat towards your goal? It's been very hit and miss for us this season, I'd say.
I was going to say, I think back end of last season, I did one of these previews, and it sounds like a cop-out, but with Forest, I don't feel as though... You can talk about, you know, Morgan Gibbs-White and the key sort of Callum Hudson-Odoi as the creative sparks. I don't feel as though there is one particular individual that I fear. You know, it's not as though we go into a game and it's like, you've got to keep him under wraps. Because when you do get up ahead of steam at home, you can be a very formidable opponent. You know, for me, it's not a game I'm looking forward to at all. I look at your points deduction. There's that burning sense of indignation from your supporters. It's the first game back after a prolonged break. First time you can play after that point deduction itself. You're at home. You know, all of that leads me to feel as though it's going to be a very tough task for us. And with that in mind, I wouldn't necessarily say there's one player that I'm looking at and thinking we've got to handle him. You know, it's more of a team-wide concern. And that in itself is certainly a worry when you look at our record going into the final 10, 15, 20 minutes of games, because if you are searching for a goal, you get a couple of corners and you're really putting the pressure on, it's on us to make sure we see it out. And that does look as though we're going to have Dean Henderson in goal rather than Sam Johnston, which from a continuity perspective isn't ideal because Sam had won back the number one shirt when Oliver Glasner came in. Through injury now, he's not going to be available. So there is that level of uncertainty there. Mark Gay is not going to be in the back three. So, you know, there are worries for me, but I'm just hoping that this 3-week spell with an intense training schedule has enabled us to have more of an idea of what we're going to be doing across the 90.
Yeah, probably a warm reception for Dean Henderson, and I hope that he might chuck one in. I'm just going to tell everyone that off air you said Chris Wood is the biggest threat.
Okay, well, yeah. To be fair, Chris Wood is always, you know, he's a worry, shall we say. I'm not immediately worried, shall we say. But that could come back and bite me, couldn't it? So
I never would have said, and I think most Forest fans would have said, that Chris Wood would score 10 league goals for us this season. So that's been a nice surprise, I guess. What's your lineup prediction, Dan, before a score prediction?
I will say Henderson, Munoz, Ward, Richards, Anderson, Mitchell, Lerma, Wharton, Ayew, Eze, who's the other one I would go with? Definitely Mateta up top. It's difficult, you know, because we haven't really... If Michael Olise isn't available, there's this worry about Mateus Francer and whether or not he should be thrown in from the start. I wouldn't be able to give you the final one because it depends largely on exactly how this 3 weeks has gone. Ahamada is another player that's been on the fringes of our first team. Plenty of people have said he's not going to make it as a Premier League player, but he played in a friendly against Bodo Glimt over in Marbella, played relatively well. He may well be thrown in, but the 10 that I've given you, I am 99.9% sure it's that one extra player at the other end of the field that I'm not 100% on in terms of who Oliver Glasner will decide to get the nod. Maybe yeah. Edouard on the flank, but even then, you know, I feel like he'll want to keep him in reserve to play up front if we need to make a change.
I'm not sure if you can play 5-2-3-1. I mean, having too many players.
Have I chucked in 12, have I?
I think you have, yeah.
Three? Hang on. You got three at the back. Three at the back.
3-4-3 you're going with, I think.
You got five at the back, two in the middle. Oh, no, maybe I don't actually need. No.
Yeah.
See, this is how long I've been away, right? I'm now adding players. I'm now adding players to the team. Maybe that's the way we could try and beat you, to be fair. Chuck's
well yeah. That'd be all right. What's your score prediction, Dan?
I see, the thing is, I'm so infected by Roy Hodgson, I can't predict us to go away and win games. I even though I'd love to, even though I'd love to say 2-0 Palace, we're gonna blow it away. I just can't do it because the amount of goals we've conceded in the last 15 minutes of games, it haunts me. And if we are, say, one goal to the good, I just almost expect us to concede one, if not two. You know, at Spurs, we were winning with 15, 20 minutes to go and we collapsed. So I'll say 2-2. There you go. I think it will be a free-flowing one. I don't think it's going to be a stalemate because I think we're going to go out there and attempt to really put our stamp on things. But that in itself might lead to a bit of a ding-dong battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for Palace maybe getting something out of this is maybe quieting the crowd down. I think because of what's come out and the fans now realising, oh, we're up creek, that we might have to actually start supporting the team after Cooper's departure, because there has been a very, I don't know how you want to say it, it's been very like moody. I'd
Can
say
I ask
maybe
you a question about that.
Yeah,
is
go
that
on.
All right? Because as far as I'm aware, or at least as far as I was aware, most Forest fans didn't actually want to see Steve Cooper go. So he's gone. You've now got Nuno in. What is the general feel towards Nuno? Like, are there pockets of fans that are happy with him and the style of play? Are there pockets of fans that feel as though he shouldn't be in the job? Are there pockets of fans that feel he's been given a poison chalice because there are so many that didn't want Steve Cooper to go? What is the general feel there?
It's almost like, I don't know if this is the correct analogy, but I'm gonna go for it anyway. It's like catching your wife in bed with another bloke in it. Like, and Nuno's happened to be that bloke, right? But you love Steve Cooper because of what he's achieved and what he's done. And in my eyes, he overachieved, because you take a team from the bottom of the championship and you get them promoted, and then you keep them up with the circumstance we're in. You've overachieved, right? And he's been a great bloke, and he really like got the city and he got the club. But unfortunately, football is a results game. It doesn't matter how nice you are, and maybe affects it. Maybe in some respects, being too nice is what cost him. In the grand scheme of things, Nuno's come in, and I think he's kind of been that unfortunate bloke that's replaced someone that is now regarded as a bit of a legend, and he's probably getting a rough end of the stick because of who he's replaced rather than the football. And then everyone always looks more like at the Spurs thing of Nuno's career rather than the Wolves thing.
I
think he's a good manager, and I think if we stay up and he gets the summer, I think it will become better.
In terms of style of play or in terms of the way the fans feel?
I think both. I think the way we play is more positive. We get players in the box, we're scoring goals. I mean, I think the first maybe half a dozen games or more, we were scoring like two goals a game. I was never doing that under Steve. And ultimately, as you know, Dan, and as every football fan knows, goals win your games. We weren't winning every single one of those games, but we were scoring goals against teams that were better than us, and in different circumstances as well. So now we're playing the last nine games. I think only Tottenham and City are like in the top six. Everyone else is like 10th and below. So we've got a really good opportunity now.
Yeah,
real opportunity to stay up now. And I think if we're come to the end of the season, we're talking about a points reduction that got us relegated, then we've really got ourselves to blame, really. And the players have got to look at themselves. I've said this loads of times, like the players are the ones who've got to kind of stand up and be counted for, because we're conceding too many rubbish goals. too many rubbish goals. Honestly, that's 19 goals from set pieces is embarrassing.
So, like you said, someone's got to change. Either we're going to be shut out by you and it will be the sign of Nuno getting to grips with the set pieces, or we'll end up scoring three and you'll think, oh my God.
Open play, I've not really been a massive concern. It's been literally set pieces and other like, and just individual areas. Like, but in every game we've been in, apart from maybe Villa, and even at Villa, we almost got it back to 3-3 from 3-0 down. If Alanga could find his shooting boots.
I will say, and obviously this isn't about Luton because we're talking about Forest and Palace, but I do look at Luton, and to be honest, I felt like they had a decent chance of staying up before a ball was kicked this season anyway. I thought people were too quick to write them off. to go to Bournemouth, be 3-0 up and lose 4-3, that should be like a terminal blow for pretty much any club when they're in a relegation battle. The points deduction for you has slightly shifted things, admittedly, in terms of momentum. But I still feel as though your squad as a whole, with Nuno in charge, should have more than enough to overturn that points deduction and still finish above them. That's my perspective. But at the same time, they've got a pretty favourable run in themselves. So it's going to be a difficult one to call.
They've got some really tough. I think the next four are really like difficult because they play Spurs, City, Bournemouth, and then I can't remember if they play like Chelsea or someone like that. So there's going to be loads of twists and turns at the end of the season. I think I've calculated before the last set of fixtures, there was about 18 or more fixtures between like the bottom six teams. So it's going to be really, really good in some respects, but also absolutely terrifying for those involved, especially like yourself.
Maybe we'll settle for a point this weekend and then we can beat Bournemouth and then everything just goes calmly for both of us.
Well, if we beat Fulham, then I'll take 4 points.
Well, there you go. Let's just settle on a 2-2 draw. Everyone has a bit of fun and then we win our next game and everyone's happy.
Yeah, that'll do. I'll take that, Dan.
There you go, see?
All right, well, thank you very much, Dan. Obviously, I know people might not know who you are. I don't know why I say this every time, but if anyone wants to check yourself out, you're on Twitter. You do YouTube now. You've got a nice new camera.
I haven't been on YouTube for a couple of months, but that's because I've been having an office built specifically, purely for the YouTube thing so that I can actually go full steam ahead with that and do it every day rather than sitting up in my loft as I am now and it all being a bit haphazard with the Amazon man ringing and the washing machine finishing and everything else. So, yeah, my plan is to go down to the end of my garden in my office and plough forward with the YouTube in a big way. So hopefully more people will see my face over the next year or two.
Bro. All right, Dan. Well, take care. Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries.
Hope the trip to the City Ground for Palace isn't too fruitful. 2-2 draw, we'll take it. But we'll see you all in the next one for when we review the Palace game on the Sunday. Take care. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You win? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.